Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening.
The daily website for the Amish. All right. Man, we're talking about leadership in this series, and the truth is that leading is hard. There was a point in this last year when I was facing a bunch of leadership issues. Some were personal, some were church, and it just started to feel overwhelming. Like, there's always issues, but there were a lot. And like, I was losing sleep, and I don't lose sleep. I just don't really get stressed much, but it was like, man, I've been doing this for like 23 years, and leading is still hard. We're doing this series called Hard Charger, and in this series, we're looking at a guy named Moses' life, a few scenes from his life. And Moses was one of God's first leaders. We saw last week that God called Moses out of his everyday, ordinary life and job to go confront the king of Egypt and then lead, demand that he let the 2 million Israelites go free from slavery, leave them out of Egypt through the wilderness and to the promised land. Moses told God why he could not do that. And God told him that he could. God said, I will be with you. I will lead you as you lead. I will empower you to do what you need to do. Moses very reluctantly agreed. He was not sure he wanted to. In fact, he was pretty sure he didn't. But he knew that he had to do what God was calling him to do. And we learned last week that God has called you. God made you to make a difference, to play a role in his mission. God has called you to serve in the church. If you are a follower, a believer in Jesus, God has called you in the Bible countless times to serve in the church. And we admitted last week that, man, a lot of us are maybe a little reluctant about that. Like Moses, we have some excuses why we can't. And we want to say no, but we have to say yes. And last week, some of you did, like a bunch of you stepped up and said, all right, put me on a team. I'm going to try volunteering. I want to start serving. And that is so awesome. I am so proud of you who did. And this week, honestly, we're hoping that maybe more of you will step up and say yes to God's call on your life. Now, we mentioned last week, there's a bunch of different volunteer positions, but we kind of highlighted a few where we really need some more volunteers. So like, for instance, on our what we call our frontline team, we need 8 new hosts. Those are the people in the welcome area center that are smiling when you come in. And we need 12 new baristas. We're going to actually start serving coffee at the coffee bar. If you're kind of extroverted, love people, that'd be a great position to serve in. In our next gen ministry, we need 10 new children's ministry volunteers, some for Sunday, some for Monday evening when we have another service. And when we need 8 new volunteers in our student ministry, which meets on Thursday nights, except for during the summer, teenagers, it's a really fun time. And then in our creative arts ministry, we need about 12 new setup, breakdown, and stage managers. So these are people who come a little early, get the room set, or after services, get the room set, help get the stage set. God has called you to serve, and we would love to help you fulfill your purpose. You could put your contact information on a card today, check volunteering, and then put the area you'd like to try. You'd be signing up for a first serve, which means you're not saying, I'll be in for life. You're saying, let me try this one time, kind of kick the tires, and decide if this is the right spot for me. If it's not, we'll help you find one that is. In this series, though, we're talking about even more than that. We're talking about becoming a leader for God. And maybe you have been volunteering, but God's calling you to step up and become a leader. At Verve, we believe that every person is a leader or a potential leader. And perhaps it's time for you to start leading. So, like, maybe you've been in a Verve group, and it's time for you to start thinking about leading your own Verve group. One of the other needs we have is for 12 new apprentices for our fall semester of Verve groups, which means you'd be like an assistant leader, you get trained up so that you could lead your own group maybe next year. Or maybe you've been volunteering in the children's ministry and you need to talk to our next gen pastor and say, hey, I think I might be ready to step up and like coach some volunteers in the children's ministry. I've been doing it for a while. And even if you're not yet leading at Verve, you're probably leading somewhere. Like in your home, maybe you have kids and you lead them. Or at work, you might have a few people who you're in charge of. You might have a leadership position in the community, like Boy Scouts or Little League or something. And if you are leading, what you know is leading is hard. It's hard. That's what Moses discovered. So Moses is called by God. He believes that he cannot do it. He says no, but God tells him he needs to. He says yes. So he goes to the king, the Pharaoh of Egypt, and he demands, you need to let God's people go. And he is met with a hard no. But God enables Moses to be a hard charger, and he keeps going back, and he demands it, and finally he makes it happen. He leads the 2 million Israelites out of Egypt, out of slavery, and towards the promised land. It's amazing. What an accomplishment. And then the problems start. You wouldn't think so, right? You'd think everyone would be happy. We just escaped slavery. This is great. And it was for like a couple hours, and then the problems begin. There are always problems, and part of leadership is dealing with those problems, not just fixing the problems, but leading yourself. How do you handle having to deal with all these problems? Is it fun with all? No, it's not fun. I've never thought it's fun, but it's a part of leadership. Here's the thing. You can avoid some of the problems by just not leading. But by not leading, you avoid greatness. You avoid greatness. You avoid experiencing something great with God. You avoid experiencing and accomplishing something great for God, and you really don't want that. But there's a guy in our church, and he's really been growing in his faith, and he's been taking his faith more seriously, and so he's been talking to people outside of church about his faith and his relationship with God. Leadership is influence. He's trying to have influence in people's lives for God. I am so proud of him. It's so fun to watch. And so he has this friend who he's been talking to who starts coming to church and starts to look to him for advice, and this friend, he's got a bunch of issues, and he's got some crazy situations going on in his life. And so this Verve guy has kind of been thrown into the middle of all this drama. And one day he came up to me and he said, wow, remind me again, why am I doing this? Because God's called you to it. Because God is worth it. Because that other guy and where he needs to go in his life, he's worth it. And because it's worth it, leading is worth it. Without it, you do avoid problems, but you also avoid greatness. It's worth it. But it's still hard. So how do you deal with the problems? What we're going to do is we're going to look at a few scenes from Moses' life and see how he dealt with the problems, and I think they might be instructive for us, okay? We're going to be in Exodus chapters 15 through 17. If you have a Bible, you can turn there. If you don't have a Bible, no problem, because we put the verses on the screen. If you don't own a Bible, we give them out for free at the Velcro Bar. I'd love to give you a Bible today. So the situation is that Moses, with his brother Aaron, is leading the Israelites through the desert towards the promised land. And the first thing that happens in Exodus 15 is that the Israelites get thirsty. Thirsty. They all start complaining against Moses. Some kind of leader he turns out to be. Check it out. Exodus 15, starting in verse 24. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What are we to drink?" Then Moses cried out to the Lord. So the people complain, Moses prays, and the next thing we see in the story is that God, miraculously, through Moses, provides water for the people, okay? Then, the next chapter, Exodus 16, the Israelites get, anyone want to guess? Hungry, that's exactly right. Yep, they get hungry, so here it is, starting in verse 2. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." Yeah, right. It was great in Egypt. It was an all-you-can-eat fondue buffet in Egypt. No. They were slaves in Egypt. It was horrible in Egypt. It says the whole community grumbled against Moses. 2 million people all grumbling, complaining about Moses' leadership. And Moses didn't even ask for this job, right? He didn't run for election. Like, God gave it to him. So the next thing we see in that story is that Moses goes off, goes to God, and he says, God, what do I do? What do I do with these people? They're hungry. And God tells Moses, I'll take care of it. I got it. I'll provide food. And God does. Miraculously, through Moses, God provides food for all the people. Then, next, the Israelites get thirsty again in verse 3. But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst? Then Moses cried out to the Lord, what am I to do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me. The people complain. Moses again, Moses prays again, and God miraculously, through Moses, provides water again. If you're a leader, you are going to experience issues, problems like Moses did. It could be all kinds of things. It could be like Moses, that people are criticizing your leadership. Did you notice what Moses did every time? When he faced problems, when he was criticized, it says Moses cried out to the Lord. Every single time. It's like that song we sang earlier. I call out. You guys want to hear me sing? I know. All right? It's like I call out your name. It feels like a song. Like this is something I was meant to do. Moses cries out to God. That's what leaders do. Ready? When you experience problems and stress and issues, leaders lean into God. Leaders lead into God, just like Moses, but not just Moses. You read the Bible and you'll see this with every single godly leader. So there's another early leader in God's history here on earth, David. David becomes a leader for God. There's this one point where he's leading this group of men and things go wrong. Something bad happens. It's really bad. It's not David's fault at all, not a bit, but he gets blamed, of course, because he's the leader. And it's bad. Like, all the guys are talking about, debating, should we kill him? Like, should we kill David because of what's happened? And David knows, like, he might die. So what do you do? What does David do? Does he work on a strategy to fix the situation? Nope. Does he give his men a speech to try to calm them down and get them? Nope. Here's what he did. 1 Samuel chapter 30 says, David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. What leaders do. Leaders lean into God. We see it with Jesus. So Jesus was a leader, and he faced lots of problems, lots of opposition. He faced issues with the people he was leading. And what we see with Jesus is that regularly there's this pattern where Jesus would go off by himself, often like early in the morning or late at night, and he would pray for a long time. Leaders lean into God. So remember, I told you that I was facing a bunch of leadership issues earlier this year, and it got overwhelming, but I did not tell you what I did. I went for a walk. I got up early, and I walked and walked and walked and walked and walked, and the whole time I was crying out to God. I like with every step, like, God, what do I do? God, I need you. God, I can't do this, but you can. God, you're gonna have to come through for me. God, help me. God, give me a different perspective. God, give me peace. I strengthen myself in the Lord. And listen, if you're gonna serve God, and if you're gonna lead, and I hope you do, because we believe at Verve that everyone is a leader or a potential leader. If you lead, you're going to experience problems. Yay! There's always problems. It's part of leadership. And when you experience problems, you go to God. You find strength in Him. God invites you to do that. He asks you to. Dave mentioned earlier that Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. I will give you rest. There's another place where we're told to do this. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7 says, cast all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. Whatever every worry, every fear, all your anxieties, cast them on him. He cares for you. Leaders lean into God. When they do, it actually changes things. Not necessarily the situation, But like you lean into God and it changes your perspective. You get God's perspective. It's like it starts to look different, the whole situation. You see things you weren't seeing before. And you get God's peace. But like the problem might be the same, but you start to have this sense of like, God's got this. This is going to be okay. He's going to see me through this. Leaders lean into God. But there's another thing that leaders do. Like when they're facing stuff and they're starting to get weary. So let's look at one more scene from Moses' life. So Moses is still leading the whiny, complaining, grumbling Israelites through the desert. And suddenly, check this, they're attacked. Exodus 17, verse 8. The Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. So the Amalekites were a foreign nation. The Israelites are headed from Egypt to an area called Canaan, the land that God had promised them. That whole path is nowhere near where the Amalekites lived, okay? And so it's not like the Israelites are encroaching on their territory. It's not like they're threatening their land or their families. The Amalekites literally go out of their way to try to cut the Israelites off from the promised land and attack them. Next verse. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some of our men and go out to fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands." Okay, Joshua was Moses' leadership apprentice. Leaders always raise up other leaders. That's what leaders do. We're going to talk a little bit about that next week. And so he's got this leader he's raising up. The staff of God, he mentions, was Moses' old shepherding staff. It was a big old stick. Moses had been a shepherd. God called him from that to being the leader of 2 million people. And we saw last week that God used that staff, that stick, to demonstrate his miraculous power. So it become kind of special as a symbol of their dependence on God. Okay? Next verse. So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. Aaron is Moses' brother. This is the first time in the Bible that Hur is mentioned. Hur is a bad name for a dude, right? Like when they were picking teams for kickball on the playground and Hur is standing next to some girl and the team captain says, "I'll take Hur." And everybody's like, "Who, him or her? Hur or her?" Right? It's a bad name for a dude. Just biblical analysis there. Next verse. As long as Moses held up his hands down in the battle, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. When Moses' hands grew tired, they took a stone, put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. Okay, so just make sure we got the scene. So the Amalekites come out of nowhere. They attack the Israelites. It's bad, right? That sounds bad. It's worse than you think it is. Here's an insight on the Amalekites. We're given this detail a little later in the Bible, but about this very day. Here it is in Deuteronomy, another book of the Bible, chapter 25. It says, "Remember what the Amalekites did to you along the way when you came out of Egypt. When you were weary and worn out, they met you on your journey and cut off all who were lagging behind." They had no fear of God. So the very first targets of the Amalekites were the sick, the elderly, the disabled, little children, like the weaker people in the back who couldn't keep up. They were going and killing them off. And so these Amalekites are bad. This is a bad situation. Add to that, the Israelites have never been in a battle before. Right? They haven't been their own nation. They've been slaves. They've never fought before. And this is a battle they have to win. They have to. And we saw they do. How? Through Moses holding up his hands with this stick, this staff in his hands. When his hands are up, they're winning in the battle. As soon as he lowers his hand, they start losing in the battle. Eventually, he can't hold his hands up anymore. And so Aaron and Hur come in, and they each hold up a hand to make sure that he can keep his hands up. Question, why did Moses have to have his hands in the air? Maybe God's a fan of hip hop, and he wanted Moses to throw his hands up in the air and wave them like, I just don't care. Probably not. Maybe God was foreshadowing the iconic scene from Say Anything, and so Moses was like this, and in your eyes, the light, the heat, in your eyes. Like, probably not. No, I think that it symbolized prayer. I think that was the idea, right? Moses' hands weren't just raised, they were raised to God. He was acknowledging that we are not fighting on our own. There are two sides in this battle, but we are not like the other side. They're fighting on their own. We are in this battle with God. We are entirely dependent on God. And so much so that we have got three guys who could be fighting, but they're up making sure that we are focused on God, praying to God. Again, we see that what Moses is doing is he is crying out to God. That's what leaners do. They lean into God. But what strikes me is Moses can't cry out to God on his own. He can't depend on God on his own because it said his hands grew tired, right? His hands grew heavy. Mom's spaghetti on his sweater already, but he's only got this one shot. He has to keep his arms up, and so, but he can't do it on his own, so what does he do? He has Aaron and her hold up his arms all night long. He is too weary to do what he needs to do, and so he has friends who lift him up. And every leader understands that. Every leader, right? If you lead, you will experience problems and you will face challenges and you will grow weary. And so you cry out to God. You call out to him. You lean on him. But sometimes you need help even to do just that. It's like sometimes I can't even do that on my own. And so what leaders do, leaders lean into God and leaders are lifted up by their team. Leadership is hard, and we need God, but we also need each other. As a leader, and there is nothing like knowing that not only does God got me, but I've got a team who are helping me to hold up my arms. This is why God tells us in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. You need people around you who will lift you up. You need a team. That's why at Verve we have a staff team, right? No Lone Rangers. And we have ministry teams, no Lone Rangers. And so like our creative arts team, our band and our tech and everybody, we gather together before we serve together and we talk and we share stories and we pray for each other. Our frontline teams, our Velcro Bar and our Welcome Center, they gather together before they serve together. Our student ministry team on Thursday nights gather together before they serve together and they pray for each other. We all need that. If you lead a Verve group, you have a Verve group coach who encourages you. If you're that coach, you have a Verve staff member who lifts you up. We all need that. We're kind of like geese in that way. Did he just say geese? Yes, he said geese. We're going to talk about geese again. I've never talked about geese before. But check this out. You know how geese fly in a V formation? You might have thought that they're up there trying to promote Verve, the Verve logo flying through the air. Turns out that's not it. Scientists have discovered why geese fly in a V. As each bird flaps its wings, I've been working on this impression of a goose all week. Are you impressed how I'm doing this goose flapping its wings? Thank you very much. As the goose flaps its wings, what happens is it creates an uplift for the bird behind it. It's like drafting in Mario Kart. You got me, right? And so by flying in V formation, check this, geese are actually able to fly 71% further together than if each bird flew on its own. And we're just like that. We need each other. That's why God gave us the church, to bring us together. That's why it was God's idea that within the church, there needs to be small groups. It's not Verve's idea when we talk about groups. That's God's idea because God knew, like, in a group this size, you're not going to make friends with people. You're not going to get encouraged. You're not going to have anybody who lifts you up. You need to be part of a smaller group. We have these Verve groups. And in that group, man, that happens. With geese, if a goose falls out of the V formation, they start to face incredible drag and resistance. And a goose is smart enough to know that they have to get back into their V formation, just like us. If we fall away from community, like maybe we stop showing up at church or we decide I'm not going to be in a group this semester, I'm kind of busy, what happens is we get dragged down and we start to face resistance. Question is, are we smart enough to get back into community? Geese are we? You want to hear something really interesting? Okay, so in the Bible, there is this one time when this one person is causing such problems in a church that the church is told, you need to tell this guy that he cannot keep coming to church, okay? So he's no longer allowed to attend. And what that's called in the Bible is handing him over to Satan. Handing him over to Satan. And it was necessary. This person was doing something so poisonous, cancerous. It wasn't just affecting themselves. It was affecting everybody. And it was like, listen, if we don't let you live in the community of our church, then we, where God is, we are handing you over to Satan. The idea is we know that outside of community, things will not go well for you. Your life, you're going to face opposition and resistance, and you're going to get dragged down. And our hope is that by experiencing that, you're going to have this epiphany and realize what I'm doing is wrong. Look at the pain it's causing me and other people. I need to stop doing what I'm doing, and then you can come back and experience again the community of the church. And so the idea was, the way we can help you to experience the consequences of your actions, the way we can help you feel the pain, help you to hurt enough to get you back in your right mind, the worst thing that we could possibly do is not let you come to church anymore. We hand you over to Satan. So here's the fascinating part. Here's the thing that's crazy. Lots and lots and lots of people today choose to hand themselves over to Satan. I'm talking about people who would say, I believe in Jesus and I am a Christian, but they choose not to be part of a church. Or they go to church, but like once every, you know, however, barely ever. Or maybe they walk in, go to the service, walk out, never get to know anybody, never get connected, never get in a group. And that's their choice. So what the Bible would say, what God would say is, you are choosing to hand yourself over to Satan. Like you will be dragged down and face resistance that you would not have to if you just became part of the team so you can have other people who will lift you up. So with geese, if you've ever had geese flying overhead, you hear them honking. What's interesting is the ones in the front aren't honking. It's the ones in the back. They honk to encourage the ones who are up front because it's harder to be up front because you're not getting that lift. Just like when you're in traffic, how encouraging it is when people honk at you from behind and you're like, thank you, I'm encouraged, right? Same idea. So, but it doesn't feel like that in traffic, but literally that's what the geese are doing. They're like back there going, you can do it! Like they're encouraging the geese in the front. And if a goose gets tired, who's out in front, what they do is they rotate to the back and another goose will move up and take the harder position in the front. And if a goose gets sick and can no longer stay with the V, it's not capable, two other geese will always drop out with it, go down with it, help it, and protect it. So I told you that earlier this year I was facing a lot of stuff and I got stressed, I got weary, and I went for a walk, and I talked to God, I cried out to God. I did not tell you what else I did. I shared what was going on and how I was feeling and what I was struggling with about five guys. Which five guys? Why those five guys? There are five guys who I've been in a group with. I've been in a group for a couple of years with them. Again, verb groups are 5 to 15 people who meet usually once a week and just do life together. And we'll be promoting groups in August. Our groups run September to December and January, or February to May. And you're going to hear us say, everybody needs to be in a group. And that is very true, including me. I'm always in a group. Like, In my mind, you can do with this what you want. In my mind, if I'm not in a group, I am choosing to hand myself over to Satan. I'm not going to do that to myself. That's crazy. I need to be in community. I need people to encourage me. I need people to help me. Maybe not every day, but you never know what's going to happen, and it did this year. And so I went to these five guys, and man, they lifted me up. I'm getting texts. Somebody's taking me out to lunch. You might be sitting over there right now. And they're encouraging me. That's what leaders do. Leaders lean into God and are lifted up by their team. Leading is hard, and leaders need people who will lift them up. Which, by the way, I'm challenging you to become a leader, and you'll need this. But here's what else is true. God has put leaders in your life, right? In my life. And so our responsibility is to lift them up. So like if you're in a group, again, I hope that maybe someday soon you might actually lead a group and we would help you do that. But right now, if you're in a Verb group, hold up the arms of your group leader. Like pray for them, offer to be their apprentice, ask, hey, could I lead a week maybe and just give you a week off? Organize a social project or a service project or a social outing. They will love that. Or if you have kids and you take them to a class, like every day at school or here on Sundays, one of our classes led by volunteers, lift up that teacher. Like encourage them, ask them, hey, what can I do to make your job a little easier? How could I, is there any task I could do for you and take something off of you? How might you lift up and hold up the arms of your boss at work? Maybe take him out to lunch. How about the coach of your kid's team who is investing in your child? Maybe you could write him a thank you letter. How about the pastor of your church? Trip to Australia, maybe? I'm kidding. I don't want that. I just want tickets. Knights tickets, Aviators tickets, Raiders. It doesn't matter. I'll take them. I'm kidding. But whatever leader God has put in your life, lift him up. Lift him up. Leading is hard. And it's long. It just keeps going and it's grueling and you get weary. But you also, when you start leading, you realize it's worth it. Like you can avoid problems by not leading, but you also avoid greatness. You avoid experiencing greatness with God, accomplishing something great for God. Leading is worth it. But it's hard. And there are times where it just feels impossible to keep your arms raised in the air anymore, but you have to. Now, I'll end by telling you about one more leader who kept his arms raised in the air. Jesus came to lead us, to lead us in this life to a better life and to lead us into eternal life. And leading was hard for Jesus. He faced all kinds of opposition. He was arrested under false accusations. His friends in fear all deserted him. And so the night before he was crucified, what we see is Jesus goes to this garden and he prays. He cries out to God. Jesus was a leader and leaders lean into God. The next day, he was tortured and they nailed him to a cross and Jesus kept his arms in the air. And he did that for you. He did that for you. So that you could be saved from all the mistakes you've made as the leader of your life. So I could be saved from all the mistakes I've made as the leader of my life. He did it to save you from your mistakes and to lead you into a better life and then into eternal life. So we're going to give you a few minutes to think about all this. The band's going to play one more song. And just encourage you to think about how all of this applies to you. Like what's the next step you need to take to start living this life that God has for you. And during this time, you might especially want to focus on Jesus who came to lead you and who died to save you. We have something to help you with that. We have a communion available. It's on the candlelit tables around the room, and communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice that remind us of Jesus' body and blood given on the cross for us. And it's a way that we can remember what he did, be thankful for what he did, and recommit ourselves to living under his leadership. And so if you'd like to take communion, you're totally free and welcome to do that. If you're like, man, I'm not ready for that yet. I'm kind of here investigating faith. No problem. You can just kind of stay where you're at and listen to the song and think about what your next step in your journey with God is. Okay? So let me pray for you, and then we'll give you time to pray. God, thank you for Jesus who came to lead us. to lead us into abundant full life and into eternal life with you. God, thank you that though leadership was hard, Jesus did not choose to escape it. He leaned into you and he was lifted up by his friends when they were available and he went to a cross for us, God, and we thank you for that. And God, we who have put our faith in him, we are called by you, just like Jesus, to serve, to put other people's needs before our own, and to find a place where we can serve and be a part of your church and what you're trying to do in this world. And we're called like Jesus to lead. And some of us might, like Moses, feel like we are not ready for that, but ready or not, you're calling us. And God, my prayer is that we all say yes. We go into this time, God, looking to you, crying out to you. We pray in Jesus' name.